Penguin Random House Audio presents The Memory Dress by Jade Beer. Read for you by Annabel Dowler, Heather Long, and Gordon Griffin. To Dad, who is always memorable. With love. The farther backward you can look, the farther forward you are likely to see. Winston Churchill. You are not something that you need to become to be loved. Charlie McKeezy. She wanted to see the world, but she never wanted the world to see her. Clara Beer. Prologue. Christie's Auction House, New York, 25th of June, 1997. There is a red carpet outside 502 Park Avenue tonight. The auctioneer wears an expensive dinner jacket and bow tie. His glasses balanced low on his nose, chin dipped, surveying the crowd, slowly inhaling the energy in the room. Soon he will hold it in his hands, take the crowd where he wants them, roll his immaculate British vowels over their heads, wielding his authority, driving the values higher, sometimes in leaps of $5,000 at a time. There are no reserves, and it is all to play for. This audience is here to see the world's most glamorous working wardrobe. More than 1,000 men and women take their seats. Countless others will bid by telephone. Museums, investors, private collectors, famous fans. They've had a chance to view the lots. They know what is coming. Favourites have been selected. Financial ceilings have been set. Now they eye the competition. Who are they up against tonight, and who will be the last to raise their paddle victoriously? One reserved seat on the very end of a back row remains empty, filled only in the final moments before the bidding begins. A slim, dark-haired woman, alone, elegant in black tapered wool trousers and a single-breasted red knee-length blazer, her lipstick perfectly matching the shade. She lacks the one identical characteristic everyone else in the room shares, the weighty, glossy white catalogue in their hands, revealing the briefest glimpse into the private life of a royal. A handwritten note that simply states, "The inspiration for this wonderful sale comes from just one person, our son, William." The woman in red doesn't make a single bid tonight. She sits motionless until the very end, smiles and leaves ahead of the crowd, no interest in claiming her souvenir catalogue. One single image graces its cover. Diana is posed, a pearl dangling at each ear, half smiling directly into the camera, wearing lot number 80. In its former life, this dress sat at the banqueting table at the Elysee Palace in Paris. Tonight, as it slowly rotates on the turntable, the Oyster Duchess satin warms under the lights. It comes to life once more. So familiar now you might expect its owner to appear next to it, to share an anecdote from the night she last wore it. The embroidered carnations that spread across the bodice in simulated pearls and white and gold beads are beautifully spotlit against a backdrop of rich green velvet drapes. But it is not dress number 80 that is causing a stir through the crowd. Another gown is struck through in the catalogue and now causing a ripple of intrigue to float among the first to notice it. Number 19 was listed in the original lineup, but it won't go under the gavel tonight when every other dress will be given its chance to live a second life. 80 dresses, but only 79 will sell. One is missing. Chapter 1. Meredith, London, 1988. She's barely slept. Not last night and not much for the previous 10, the number of days since she was offered the job she will start this morning. But she knows adrenaline and coffee will power her through whatever lies ahead. Meredith's stomach flips. She takes a deep grounding breath and hopes with all her heart that they will be kind, that she will be able to add something, to answer any questions directed at her. But more than anything, she hopes that she will love this job every bit as much as she's always dreamed she will. She checks her bag for the final time, ensuring everything she needs for the day is there before she leaves her small apartment. She arrives early and circles the block several times. It may inconvenience others if she arrives too soon. They won't be ready for her, and it will cause a disruption. At 8 a.m. on the dot, she presses the doorbell and waits. Another deep breath, smoothing her hands down over her brown wool coat, which now feels lacking, given what she knows is created behind this door, which is at this very moment opening to reveal a man.
Meredith?
She nods, nervous anticipation not yet allowing her to smile or offer a good morning. She reaches out a hand to shake his, but the tall man ushers her inside a cramped narrow hallway and misses it.
You can hang your coat there.
He nods towards a rail that runs the length of the small space.
And ideally your bag. We try to keep as few personal belongings in the workroom as possible. No drinks, obviously. Staff room and the bathroom are one floor up.
He nods skyward.
I'm Peter, the sample cutter.
It's lovely to meet you, Peter. I'm really looking forward to getting started.
That's great to hear, because there's a mountain to do.
Peter adds with all the weariness and none of the enthusiasm of first day Meredith.
This is the workroom where you'll be based.
He pushes open a door to another room that is again much smaller than Meredith anticipated. Everything she would expect to see is here, and nothing else. Everything is in its place, just as she likes it. There is very little colour, no plants, no personal effects, no packed lunch waiting to be eaten later.
It's all pretty self-explanatory. That's your seat.
Peter nods towards the one vacant spot close to the window. Not that there is much of a view through its frosted glass. It's one of the lower tables and, she can see, has enough space for her to neatly display all her own essentials.
I'll leave you to make your own introductions, if you don't mind. I've got to get on.
Absolutely, no problem at all. Meredith casts a broad smile around the room. She takes her time introducing herself, ensuring she makes eye contact with everyone. 11 of them in total, mostly women. Everyone nods, taking the briefest moment to acknowledge her, to assess how she will fit into their tightly ordered regime. All except one. A man in a pristine long white coat leaning over a high table, a small sharp pencil in his right hand. Meredith refuses to be ignored, so she waits. She sees the faintest frown pinch at his eyebrows. He doesn't want to pause, doesn't want to raise his head from the work he is doing, breaking his concentration, but understands that he should. His eyes move a fraction towards her. He senses her continued presence and eventually straightens. Surprisingly, his eyes are kind, not challenging. Shy, perhaps, or unassuming, thinks Meredith, rather than rude.
Hello, I'm Meredith,
she says directly to him, then watches as his face remains motionless. He's going to ignore her. She can see his head start to dip back towards the white shapes in front of him on the table.
And you are?
She tilts her head, searching out eye contact again. She allows her smile to deepen. Now is not the moment to be intimidated by anyone, least of all someone she's about to have a close working relationship with. Their eyes reconnect for a second or two longer than she suspects he has awarded anyone else so far today. William. There is the subtlest curve upwards at the corner of his mouth. She's reminded of the efficiency of Peter's smile earlier. It wasn't friendly. It was intended to communicate something else altogether. His doubt about how much she might enjoy being here, perhaps. William's smile is different, more genuine.
Well, I'm looking forward to working with you, William.
Meredith hears the door open again behind her and feels the faintest shift of energy in the room. She looks over her shoulder just as Catherine enters, instantly recognisable with her dark, shoulder-length hair and an immaculate jet-black trouser suit, the jacket open, its sleeves pushed a little up her arms, ready for work. Meredith didn't imagine she would meet her so soon. She's considerably more beautiful than the few images of her in the press suggest. But it isn't her looks that impress Meredith. Here is a woman at the very top of her game,
whose creativity and work ethic have ensured the kind of meteoric rise that might...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?